Hello and welcome back to the Secret Guide to Fundraising podcast. I'm your host, Ella, Client Services Director here at Givergy, and today we'll be exploring the top tips that can help your nonprofit when engaging your local community, whether that's volunteers, decision makers, or donors. If you've been listening into the series so far, we've spoken about the next generation of donors and the new tools nonprofits are using to connect with them. We've talked about major gift strategy and the importance of high impact sponsors, but we haven't yet explored the best ways to enthuse your local community, which is crucial to all nonprofits, but especially small and medium sized organizations. In the UK and US, this year is also an election year, and that throws up its own unique set of challenges for fundraisers looking to make an impact in their community. The issues donors care about might shift, or the decision makers in your area might change. So there is a lot to consider when planning how a campaign is going to have maximum effect. Luckily, joining me to discuss all of this and more is Javed Khan, current president and chair of Aurora Sports Hall of Fame. Javed has spent over two decades involved in community organisations, being on the board of directors at the Newmarket Chamber of Commerce and CHATS, Community and Home Assistance for Seniors. Beyond his role with Aurora Sports Hall of Fame, Javed is a highly regarded international speaker, captivating audiences at conferences and seminars worldwide. As a senior marketing executive, he collaborates with business leaders to craft impactful marketing strategies that resonate with audiences and drive long-term success in both awareness and sales. So without further ado, hi, Javed. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very well, Ella. Thank you. And thanks for having me on your show.
No problem. And where are you dialing in from?
I am dialing in from a little community just about 45 minutes north of Toronto, Ontario, Canada. The community is called Aurora. We tend to get misunderstood with Aurora, Colorado, but we're not. We're Aurora, Ontario. So that's where I'm dialing in from.
Lovely. And it's starting to get a little warmer there now. We're getting into March. I know we probably can't complain as much as you in Canada.
No, it's been unusual. It's been quite the warm winter. Maybe one or two pieces of snowfall. Other than that, we haven't had snow at all through the winter.
Great. Well, thank you for joining us today. To jump straight in, I mentioned in the introduction that you're currently the president and chair of Aurora Sports Hall of Fame. Can you explain a little bit about that organization and the community it represents?
Yeah, absolutely. The Aurora Sports Hall of Fame was established 10 years ago in 2013. And our mission, which continues, is to celebrate outstanding athletes, coaches, builders, and contributors in our community. And it's really an opportunity for us to work together to leave an indelible mark in our community when it comes to sport and sport culture. And so what we do each year, we have a signature event, and that's the induction celebration evening, where we induct four new members into the Aurora Sports Hall of Fame. And this really represents exceptional dedication and sportsmanship that these individuals have brought to their specific sport, either provincially, nationally, or internationally within their area. And so our selection process is rigorous. There is quite the work that one needs to do to put a nomination package together. We indicate to people that it takes, you know, if you want to really do a good, strong package and not guaranteeing that your candidate is going to get in the first shot, you're going to have to invest at least a good two and a half months of your time to put this package together. So we're actively involved in our community. We'll have that conversation through our conversation here today. So I just think one of the things that the Aurora Sports Hall of Fame really focuses in on is trying to engage as best as we can our community to nominate people, whereas we're not outward. We are more inquiring with our community.
Okay, great. So it's quite exclusive then. It's quite difficult to get that sort of membership. And how many members Do you call it members? How many do you have there now?
Yeah, currently so in the span of 10 years, we are approaching 50 or so Hall of Famers, honored members. We also term them as. So yes, the challenge being a community-based, hyper-local sports Hall of Fame is the fact that it's really, really, you know, we're really kind of boxed into the element that it's members of the Aurora community.
Mm-hmm. And just on your journey, so how have you become to be president there?
Well, I've been in this community now 20 years. And when I first came to the community, I wanted to give some level of volunteer work back in some way, shape, or form. So I started my journey being a member of the board for the local Aurora Baseball Association, and that led me eventually to be a member of a new sort of sports type of council called Sport Aurora. And the Aurora Baseball Association was a member of Sport Aurora, so I got involved with that organization. And then as my journey continued in the community, I was the president of the local Chamber of Commerce. And then just currently, I'm also a director of essentially an older adult organization by the name of CHATS, C-H-A-T-S. And while I was part of the Sport Aurora organization, an individual came, and she was also a member of the board, and indicated why there potentially is not a Sports Hall of Fame in our community. And that triggered the conversation and the process of organizing and developing the Aurora Sports Hall of Fame. And then a few years back, the Aurora Sports Hall of Fame became its own identity, its own independent governing organization. And so, as we say, we've been having fun ever since. So it's been quite the journey and continues to be.
Yeah, sounds great. Sounds like you've been quite busy over the last few years.
We've been busy and having some fun. Absolutely.
Having fun, that's important.
Yes.
So you spoke a little bit about the community there. So to talk on that topic, when we were planning this episode, we spoke about the importance of that. And can you speak to the connection you try to foster with your local community?
Yeah, there's really three or few things that we focus in on in terms of our primary objectives, are really our purpose. And in not any particular order, we want to, first of all, we want to foster meaningful connections with our community. We want to enhance, clearly, the Aurora Sports Hall of Fame's brand recognition and brand equity. And then we also want to elevate the awareness of the significance of our organization as a, not only as a cultural partner with our community and our municipality, but as an organization that is here to celebrate the many, many members in our community who've come and gone, and really make sure that it's always a positive experience when people come and either visit our Hall of Fame in one of our municipal asset buildings or connect with us online or even just come to one of our events. So, you know, as a community-based institution, we really have placed a strong emphasis, certainly through my tenure, a really strong emphasis on actively engaging within the community through a variety of what I call community outreach initiatives and partnerships. So this particularly includes things like, you know, participating at local events, supporting fundraisers, collaborating with other organizations. We have other cultural partners and organizations, local sport organizations that are in our community, all with that intent to raise awareness of not only our value missions and our impact, but also raise awareness of what we're about and our brand equity. So that over time, I want to get to the point where the Aurora Sports Hall of Fame really is a common piece of conversation in our community. When people hear about the Aurora Sports Hall of Fame or they see something from us, they just naturally know who we are, what our mission and values are, and what our purpose is in our community. And so what I'm really visioning that, you know, when we ask for nominations, I'm visioning that that whole funnel is so clogged up because there's so many people who are constantly trying to get in nominations. And that really focuses back on those three primary objectives and our purpose.
Okay, great. And do you think it's important to be more focused on the needs of your sort of local people rather than the national demographic?
Yeah, I think one of our challenges, and it could be a good one or it could perhaps not be a good one, depending on how the listener is thinking this one through, is we are very hyper-local, community-based organization, hence the name Aurora Sports Hall of Fame. So one of our, the great thing is that our spotlight is very, very focused in the community at this current point of recording and year. It's 65,000 individuals. So we are very hyper-local and focused. So that does restrict us in terms of some other opportunities we'd like to be part of. If we are going to be part of something that's outside of our community and we engage in individuals, I think just naturally people would ask, well, how can I get my friend or someone I know into the Hall of Fame? Well, if they're not in our community, then they don't necessarily are eligible. They don't apply. So, you know, whereas if I'm representing a national organization, my focus is much larger. My opportunity to increase my brand equity and awareness is much larger, because now, even if I go to different communities and I go not only locally, but provincially, in our case in Canada, provincially, and then nationally, I still can have the opportunity for someone to say, I'd like to nominate, a great example is the Hockey Hall of Fame, or perhaps, you know, the Canadian Sport Heritage Hall of Fame. There are some really interesting organizations that are not as hyper-local. So here's the key thing, though. I've started to go down a journey where I've just recently sent a note to all of the, as much as I can think, all of the Municipal Sports Hall of Fame to ask them if they're interested in joining my journey of creating a provincial association of sports halls of fame strictly for our particular province of Ontario.
Okay, great. So that's just started. Have you got great feedback from that? Where are you at in the beginning?
Yeah, we got great feedback. First communication went out March 1, just to kind of get a feeler. Hey, here's the purpose why I'm reaching out to you. And yes, slowly more and more people are coming back and saying, yeah, great idea. I'm in. I like to be part of the introductory conversation, and then we see where it goes. I've now got to send out a secondary communication to those who at this point haven't responded, just to feel them out, and then organize a Zoom call amongst all of these organizations to figure out, hey, is this something that we all want to do? Because right now we don't have an advocacy type of organization. We don't have an organization where we can all come together and, just like any association, understand each other's challenges, help them, have a conference. We don't have any of that type of stuff.
Mm-hmm. So that collaboration between you, what do you think the key benefits are going to be coming out of that? You know, you mentioned a few there, but, you know.
Yeah, I think the top three would be the opportunity to share challenges. Every specific community sport hall of fame may have a challenge whereby maybe they're not supported by the local municipality, or maybe someone is, but they've got another challenge. So sharing the challenges, sharing best practices. So perhaps one organization doesn't really have an issue of getting sponsorships. Like we're constantly getting, well, what are you using? Well, how are you marketing to your sponsors in your community? What pieces of material are you using? And can you share that? So that's the other second piece is, you know, best practices and celebration success stories. And the third one is really to advocate to our local government to, you know, if there are some challenges that we are having with regards to fundraising or generating revenue or getting some support by the provincial government, then it's an opportunity for us to all to advocate, because we don't have that voice in front of our local sport and tourism minister. We don't have that right now.
Yeah. Okay. And in your local community, I'm sure there are a number of charities who are all trying to engage, you know, the people of the community. How do you differentiate yourself from that crowded field?
I think in our case, there's, again, three ways we tend to differentiate ourselves. The first is we make it clear that we are nonpartisan. We are not a politically driven organization. So regardless of the office of either the mayor or their local councillors, we respect the office, we respect the councillors. We are not going to take any angle. So we try as best we can to, well, not only as best we can, we do not engage in any of those types of conversations. We respect the office, and, you know, we will work with as many as whatever the councillors of the day or the mayor of the day is. And that brings me to the second point, is we are always adaptable. We have to be adaptable in the changing times of our community and changing times of what's happening in our particular government and policies. So we really try to be like water. You know, we try to adapt with what is happening throughout. And the third one really is just continually trying as best we can to engage our community online, to go out into the community and engage with them, educating in our local schools, as best as we can to make this organization the coolest organization there is in our community, but also to engage the community members who may have some time to volunteer. So that's why we are growing our volunteer base. We're almost north of 41 volunteers and growing. And our expectations of volunteers is, you know, 5 to 8 hours a month. If you can do that, then that's great to help us with those three pieces that we were talking about.
And how are you getting those volunteers? You mentioned sort of seeking them online, going into schools. Is that how you're mainly doing it? A lot of this podcast series has been about engaging a younger audience and, you know, looking at the effect social media, et cetera, has on charities. Are you using that to engage your volunteers and audience?
Yeah, that's a really good point you mentioned about the youth, Emma. So we started a youth ambassador program. So we have youth ambassadors as part of our organization. Two of the youth ambassadors are actually sitting around the boardroom table. They're ex officio members. So the purpose of them is to just experience the board experience, understand what's happening within the organization, engage in conversation. And the youth ambassador's purpose is very much what you just stated, is to go out into the community to our youth and engage them. They all have, in our case, in our community, they all have volunteer hours that they have to do as part of their graduation piece. Okay. So they've got to have so many hours. So we engage our youth ambassadors to go out to the community. These youth ambassadors also get volunteers for us if we're doing some sort of a community event. These youth ambassadors are part of our municipality does a volunteer day. The youth ambassadors organize the volunteer day. So they have their own booth. They do what they can do to generate the participation. But they also help, as you mentioned, they also help us with different things and different ways we can communicate, both either online or even in person. When they were involved with the volunteer program, this was a program where the town was doing an event to get people to sign up for their volunteer hours. They essentially said, here are some of the things we think we would need to ensure our youth in our community are being engaged. So that's vitally important. And as I mentioned before, and I think a lot of organizations who are listening to this particular episode, take note, folks. You cannot just sit and wait for your community to come and engage with your organization. You really got to get a group of people and figure out what's happening in your community and go and outreach and engage. It may not be something that you may think is going to generate whatever it is you want to generate, but you have to look at the bigger strategic picture. So for instance, we go to the mayor's luncheon. The mayor has a luncheon and a State of the Union address. We participate in that, and just because we want to raise our awareness and our brand equity. So we're finding ways to get it. The farmer's market is another really successful one for us, and we're going back to the farmer's market. So I think really strongly that those individuals listening to this particular episode really start jotting down ways that you can outreach into your community in a very creative but also strategic way, and what areas, and kind of make a little list and figure out what would work strategically well for you.
Mm-hmm. And I guess it's a little bit of trial and error. You know, I'm sure there's some things you've done that haven't worked so well and other things have worked really well. So it's sort of encouraging people to just give it a go to start with.
Yeah, absolutely. I think while the listeners jotting down a list of things they can do in the community in terms of community outreach events that are going on, as you list them through and then pause and perhaps then circle or checkmark whatever works for you, the bigger events, the ones that have been going on in your community for a while. So I mentioned the mayor's luncheon. That's been going on for a while. Over 300 or so people attended this year's luncheon. So you may maybe just check off or circle ones that, as you suggested, you know, are ones that have been happening pretty consistently in your community and will draw a lot of people versus ones that perhaps don't draw as many people, but maybe you can attend one or two, but not all of them, just because of that. You know, you got to also be, in our case, we've got to be cognizant that all of us are volunteers. So we've got to be cognizant of people's volunteer time.
Yeah, of course. Okay. And having a strong community is especially important when going through moments of societal uncertainty. You mentioned earlier a little bit about the government, but in the US and UK this year, there are big elections. How do you feel these elections will have an impact on nonprofits and donors and in your specific case?
Yeah, I think regardless if it's a local community election or it's a national community election, I think there's really three things that the listener may want to take note of. Maybe this is already in their plan. I think the first one is regardless of whatever the government of the day is going to be in terms of the leadership, it's always going to result in new funding opportunities for nonprofits. As incoming administrations and new regimes come in, they are going to allocate resources to address different socioeconomic and environmental issues. That's what's happened with us locally and also nationally. So, but also consider that on the other hand, there will be unfortunately reductions in government spending or changes in grant-making priorities, specifically for looking at grants, and that could lead to decreased funding for either many non-for-profits or perhaps the listener who's listening, it's happened to them in terms of their non-for-profits. So just be cognizant of that. The second point is that, so you've got funding opportunities you got to be cognizant of. Second one is that political events like these elections can influence donor behavior, and it can also influence giving patterns. So donors may respond to election outcomes by adjusting their charitable giving priorities or the organization they choose to support. So the second point to consider is the donor behavior. And then the last one, the third one, is really elections, I feel, provide opportunities for non-for-profits to really get the opportunity to advocate for their causes and engage with policymakers and mobilize their supporters to participate in the democratic process. So the third one is all about the advocacy and engagement. It gives non-for-profits the clear opportunity to engage, not to take any sides, remember, engage with these policymakers, engage with your candidates. And really, your number one purpose, folks who are listening, is really to generate that brand awareness, generate and educate to these candidates what not only what you're about, but the value that you are continually bringing to the community. And the message really needs to be to these policymakers is that, hey, if we aren't involved, what would happen? And if we continue to involve, here's our vision and our strategy moving forward, and we want to do it together with the individual who is running for office. So be clear that there's funding opportunities that are going to impact you, that donor behavior is going to change. But most importantly, from a non-for-profit, really understand that the advocacy and engagement is, I would say, your top priority.
Three very good tips there. And I've got noted here, you've seen three federal elections during your time at Aurora Sports Hall of Fame and, yes, and more local ones. What are some key things that you've learned that helps the organization deal with those challenges?
Yes. So again, three things that the listener may want to just take note. First of all, understand that whatever you do, not-for-profit or not, change is inevitable. There is going to be change, especially in the political landscape. And you really have to be adaptable to change. It's vitally essential for nonprofit organizations like the Aurora Sports Hall of Fame and others who are listening that you really need to be adaptable in your environment. I've learned that the importance of being like water, being flexible and responsive to shifts in local leadership and new officials may have different priorities and approaches for governance. So first of all is the adaptability. But you also got to develop strong relationships with local leaders, regardless of their political affiliations. And Emma, that's what I mentioned earlier, is that, you know, we are no political angle at all. Regardless, just respect the office, respect the individual that is representing the office. And that's really crucial to maintain support and advocacy for your organization. So build those relationships. So you got adaptability, build the relationships. And the third one is really engage in any advocacy efforts that you can to provide the education about your mission, your values, and your impact in your community with the local leadership and elected officials. And the reason you want to do that is because that will, from my experience, help as best as you can to ensure that your priorities are not only understood, and they understand it, but they clearly understand how it impacts their community and how they can potentially support your organizations throughout their tenure as the governing party. So you're looking at adaptability, building those relationships, and advocacy and education. And one last point in the overall arching umbrella, just keep it positive. No, just keep it positive. You know, if there is opportunity or any opportunity to provide feedback, always, always keep it positive, keep it respectful. Those two pieces are going to go a long way for the brand of your organization.
And the elections coming up have the potential to be quite polarizing. So in that context, what do you think the role of charity as a whole is?
So again, three things for the listener to jot down or just kind of figure out how that works for their organization. First of all, remember that your non-for-profit organization, be it the national or local level, it's really you're advocating for unity. You're promoting messages of inclusivity. You're promoting messages of tolerance. And as I mentioned before, of respect. And it's your opportunity to counteract the, as you suggested in your comment, the polarization that may be happening in your community. So keep it positive. Bring the community together. Promote a sense of belonging and unity. That's what your brand messaging really needs to be, very positive. The second point is your organization can encourage civic engagement and participation in the democratic process. So really, regardless of any political affiliation, promote voter registration. So promote, they have to go out and vote. Promote and provide education of what the impact of the election is going to be, not only in your community, but how potentially it's going to impact your non-for-profit organization. And participate in local community initiatives. As I said, what I mean by participate, go to the events, community outreach, but don't take a stand. Just go to the event as a participant, as someone that can learn of what's going on. That will help you with your particular campaign from that meeting, but you're not going there to take a stand. You're not going there to represent a particular affiliation. And I also think that it's an opportunity for your listeners to understand that they have the ability to be the voice of change in a very positive and respectful way. And the third one is lead by example. I'm a huge fan as a leader, a community leader, lead by example. You have the ability to embody the values of unity, empathy, and collaboration in your organization, not only your best practices, but also as someone representing your organization in your community. Lead by example. So you got advocacy for unity, promoting civic engagement, and leading by example. Those really three things I think are going to be at the core of both, I think, definitely the elections in the United States, but also in any other election in any other country. But I refer to our friends in the U.S. because their election is coming up, and there's a lot of polarization going on in that community. And as a non-for-profit, it's your opportunity now to bring that together.
Yeah, absolutely. When thinking about the link between local communities and fundraising, we've seen research that shows small dollar giving is down. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, I think there are, again, three things that the listener perhaps has already experienced or can plan for. First of all, like it or not, there are other nonprofit organizations like ours who are competing for attention. It is what it is. That's what it is. And so you have to embrace it, and you have to figure out what can you do in today's, like it or not, digital age that you can get your information out there. How can you do that? How can you appeal to potential fundraisers from a variety of sources? So, you know, understand that fundraising efforts have changed. So you've got to be a little bit more creative in terms of getting the attention for competition. Number two, be open. You know, people talk about authenticity, being real. Be open and honest, and be as transparent as you can. You know, in an era that, again, because of digital, there's a lot of scrutiny online, there's a lot of awareness about non-for-profits. So understand that you as an organization and as a listener, you need to start planning for ways that you can be as transparent and honest as you can. You know, invite people into your organization, invite people into what different processes are involved so they clearly understand and you're fully transparent with them. And the third one is the competition for online platforms. The rise of the online fundraising platforms are huge. As you mentioned, social media is very, very strong. It's a common thing in our society now. And so you've got social media campaigns really are allowing you to expand the opportunities for individuals to support charitable causes beyond just the local communities. So, you know, just understand that, how can I compete for the online platform? But I'm not just saying just stick with online. Also consider what's going on locally in your local paper. Is there a local paper or publication that you can kind of do both the digital and in the paper version together to draw some unity between someone reading the paper and then driving them to perhaps a page on your website or to your social platform? So, you know, those three things really need to take some consideration into. And again, make a list of how that can impact and what your plan would be to match these three pieces that we just spoke about.
And do you think the economic conditions are having an impact on Aurora Sports Hall of Fame and other nonprofits at the moment?
Yeah, I think so. I certainly think, you know, regardless of if you're in any part of the world, unfortunately, there are economic factors that are impacting gas prices, food prices, clothing. There's a lot of things. And there are more and more, unfortunately, people who just cannot afford even just to get their next grocery. It's, you know, food insecurity is certainly a common topic within our country, and I'm sure it is a common topic globally. So yes, there's a lot of economic factors that have impacted certainly non-for-profits from past to current.
And if you had to change your messaging with that in mind at all, you know, have you sort of had to make it sort of different in that we know that the situations might be hard at the moment, but we're still looking to raise funds. Like, how have you changed your message in that regard?
You know, I think the messaging for us, one of the strengths of any marketing campaign or PR campaign is to stick with your messaging, keep it consistent. I think we try to change it a little bit when we can, if there is the opportunity for us, is to ensure that there is some connectivity to the current situation and to how that relates to our messaging. So we're always constantly sticking to our core mission and values. And again, going back to our purpose is to generate that brand awareness and generate and increase the brand equity of our organization.
And you're also a senior marketing executive alongside everything else. So what tips do you have around marketing and the messaging for our audience?
Yeah, this is a great question. And I love this one because I always say to organizations, be it not-for-profit or not, you know, just imagine if I was your director of marketing. Well, let's imagine I'm the director of marketing. I come to you. This is what I would say to you in terms of what the organization should do moving forward. And it may or may not be something that you're already doing or something that you may want to consider. I think as your marketing person, I would say focus on your core mission. Keep focused on that core mission. Is again, amongst the political discourse that's going on and the competing priorities that we spoke about in the competition, it's really essential for non-for-profits, for the listeners to understand. And if they're doing this, fantastic, but continue to do the following: be consistent and stay true to your core mission and values. And if you have to change it, that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. Just to ensure that core mission and values, when you're changing it, doesn't necessarily make a major change in your core mission and values, but just adds to it because you need to be adaptable, as we spoke about. So really center your messaging around the impact of your organization. You know, how is it impacting your organization and making a big impact in your community, and emphasize the value proposition of your organization. And that's quite key. Second point is really be real and transparent. We spoke about this also already, that, you know, being real and transparency as a marketer is really the key pillars of effective communication, especially during times of heightened uncertainty and polarization. You know, you've really got to find ways to build trust with your audience by being genuine in your messaging. When I say build trust, that doesn't mean automatic trust, by the way. That means consistent messaging and earning that trust. It just doesn't mean you're automatically going to get that. And in order to do that, you got to be consistent in your messaging, share authentic stories of how what you've been doing has impacted the community, and provide transparent insights into your organization's goals and activities. And then emphasize the unity and collaboration. You know, as a marketer, I would find opportunities to position your organization as a unifying force that basically transcends the political divides that are going on in your community, and bring people together around your shared values and goals. Really be that positive beacon for your community, especially if you're in that community where there's a lot of polarization. Really, as I always say, and we say this in our organization, you know, always go high. If they go low, you go high. And that's vitally important as our brand equity continues to grow. So I would also leave this with your listeners is, leverage those digital platforms. Really, you know, social media and the digital world has really changed in the last, gosh, forget the five. Now it's even in the 10 years. I say, you know, social media has now grown up. They were somewhat kids back in the day. Now they're growing up into mature, you know, young adults. So how you engage on social, I would say your number one thing is just be as consistent as you can and really engage with the audience. If they make comments on your social channels, have someone to comment back. If they're asking questions, be there to answer the questions. If they make a positive comment, thank them for that. Like, that goes a long way over time. And organically, you'll start to see some individuals start joining your social channel. So those are, as you know, that marketing side of me, those are certain things that I would jot down and figure out how can we strategically put that as part of our plan, be it a 2 or 3 year plan moving forward.
Perfect. And we're almost out of time. But before we wrap up, I know it's gone really fast.
Yes.
Before we wrap up, is there anything else that you want, any more information or any other advice that we haven't spoken about today that you'd like to give our audience?
Yeah, real quick. I think what we haven't really spoken about, and this is vitally important for your listeners and for nonprofits, please celebrate your volunteers. Thank your volunteers all the time. You know, manage their expectation. not only manage their expectation, but respect their management of time. A lot of your volunteers, you know, they've got family, they got friends, they got personal life, they've got a job. So just manage those volunteers and celebrate them as best as you can all the time. And then also celebrate your wins in your community. Thank your community for their support of your organization. It goes a long way, and encourage your community to be involved in some way, shape, or form in your organization. And certainly, Emma, if there's an opportunity for people to reach out to me, I'm on LinkedIn quite regularly. So just look me up under Javed, S as in Sierra, Khan. So you got to look me up under that name. You'll see me there, and invite a connection and let's start conversation. And if there's an opportunity from there to have a one-on-one conversation, I'm happy to do so.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much. It's been really lovely to speak to you today. And I really appreciate you spending time sharing your experience with our audience. And I think you are going to get a few messages post this conversation. So that's been brilliant. Thank you.
Listen, I appreciate the time, and I've become a fan of the podcast. For those who haven't listened to other podcasts or other episodes of this podcast show, I strongly recommend. That's what I'm starting to do slowly. And there's some great, great content that you can hear from Emma and her team. It's brilliant. And there's some really good notes that you can take away. So I strongly encourage you to do that. And this is, by the way, unsolicited. I wasn't asked to do this. I'm not getting paid to do this. So please do so. Thank you.
Thank you very much.